Kill the boy, Jon Snow. Winter is almost upon us. Kill the boy and let the man be born.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chomp, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons licensed music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3.
It's a pretty dramatic quote, I think.
Yeah, man, all this death and destruction.
Although out of context, it really makes it sound like Jon Snow is just going to murder a child.
Hey, the series is not over yet. He may indeed do that.
Here's hoping.
Yeah, exactly. Something needs to bring that guy down. He's still too much of a goody-two-shoes for my taste.
Little child murder goes a long way.
It'd make him a whole lot more like Jaime, and turns out Jaime's my favorite character.
More hardcore than Jamie, especially if he succeeds in murdering the child.
Yeah, exactly. Well, how's that for an uplifting intro to a podcast there, guys?
Yeah, you use that word. I'm not quite sure if you know what it means.
No, actually I don't.
It's actually a type of woman's hat.
Ah!
An uplifting.
Ah, I see. I believe they wear them in San Diego.
Yes.
We're gonna head way down a deep rabbit's hole of movie references from there, aren't we? If we're not careful.
I'm gonna try to stop that. Introducing myself. My name is Brett Zeiler.
Will Lentz. And our guest host this week.
I'm Luke Homan, also known online as Jim with two M's.
You know, I've been meaning to ask, because I was very confused when I found out your name is actually Luke. Where did the Jim with two M's come from?
It's something I came up with a number of years ago when I was playing online Risk. You know, the only thing that you really know about your opponent on this particular platform was his name. And so I decided I would try and come up with a name as unthreatening as possible.
Sneaky.
Brilliant.
So I originally went with Jimmy, because I thought that was just the most unassuming, don't attack me, I'm just Jimmy, sort of name I could come up with. And eventually I got tired of that, slice off the Y, and just went with Jim. And
with two M's.
With two M's.
One can never have enough M's.
No, it's very handy.
Well, that was an awkward cut there. Still working on this chemistry thing with the new guest host here, but we're happy to have you on, Luke or Jim, and we've got you on this week for our Stark discussion. Again, for any listeners jumping into things fairly new, we're trying to hit one house an episode here in the run-up to Worlds, kind of talk about where they stand right now and whether they're worth playing. And Jim here, I think, recently had some success in an Octagon tournament with Stark. Am I correct?
Yeah. DC Dennis, that's his online name, was kind enough to organize a, I think, 85-person Octagon tournament that went
on
for a couple months. It was, I think, 8 rounds of Swiss followed by a top 16. And it was a fantastic tournament. He's done it a couple times now, and I would encourage anyone next year, he does it every year, to join the tournament and, you know, try your might.
Cool. So how did this one wind up going for you? And if I may, what'd you play for it?
This one went rather well for me. I was fortunate enough to get first place in the tournament. And yeah. I went with a House Stark deck using no agenda, but then having the Kindly Man as my character agenda.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just playing lots of sweet out-of-house non-uniques for you to jump in, or recur, rather.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of out-of-house cards. It's one of my favorite things about Game of Thrones as a card.
Ditto.
Is that you can, you know, as opposed to other games like I used to play Star Wars, where you could never take a light side character and put them on the dark side. But I love the idea of running out-of-house cards into another house to really shore up the weaknesses of a house or really enhance their strengths. So in this particular deck, I decided to go with three copies of Wintertime Marauders. Ooh. It was actually a Stark Winter deck. And so I personally am a big fan of running cards out of house. It's one of my favorite things about Game of Thrones. You can take an out-of-house card and really add to the strengths of a house or really sort of shore up its weaknesses. And so I decided to run three copies of Wintertime Marauders out of house. And I would play them either for 5 gold, which is actually a bargain considering how good they are, or recur them again and again with a Kindly Man.
So were you running Desperate Measures or anything like that to cheat guys into your discard pile?
The first version of my deck actually ran Desperate Measures. But I discovered that by the time I added influence into the build, it really watered down so much what I was doing that it wasn't worth including it.
Okay, gotcha. So you just straight up paid the full cost for stuff or waited for it to die or be discarded naturally?
Yeah, all three, really. I ran a number of income locations. Let's see. Two copies of Kingdom of Shadows, I think, is a natural include. And then I actually included 5 zero-cost gold locations, as well as all the reducers that could reduce those marauders. So yeah. The Ocean Road, the River Row, Flea Bottom, Street of Steel, Street of Sisters.
Sounds like quite the resource base there.
Yeah, I find when you're running Winter, the last thing you want to do is choke yourself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That is a terrible feeling.
All right, well, yeah, I'm glad you're someone did pretty well with Kindly Man. It's always been a deck that it's always been like next to something I'm interested in, but I can't ever bring myself to build one up to play with. Then again, that goes for most Stark decks in my life.
Yeah, it seems like a really cool build. I mean, you took down the Octagon tournament. Would you go so far as to say it is a
one of the things I like best about Kindly Man is it's one of those decks that gets stronger as the game goes on.
Mm-hmm. I could definitely see that. Yeah, because just as the piles build up more, there's just more and more options for you to snag guys with.
Yeah, and you know, it recovers really well from a Valor.
Definitely. Were you running anything else out of house other than the Marauders? Around here, Viper's Bannerman has frequently been a popular choice. Though I could see that being quite hard in winter.
Yeah.
But the Viper's Bannerman would have used up my restricted spot, mm-hmm. and I needed that for great.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe we'll pick up with a little more general line of questioning from here then?
Sounds good.
Sound good? It got super quiet. Okay.
You still there?
Yep.
Okay,
so Kindly Man in general, you just won an Octagon tournament with it. Would you say it's a tier one Stark build right now? Would you say it's the Stark build right now? Would you go that far?
I would go so far as to say it's the Stark build right now. I think Stark struggles the most with draw, and by using the recursion engine of the Kindly Man, it gives you an alternative for the draw engine that Stark really doesn't have.
I could see that. Did you run into much trouble then getting the Kindly Man on your house card?
Some games I never did, and that's why I think a Kindly Man deck can't revolve entirely around Kindly Man. That's why I don't like decks like the Viper's Bannerman Kindly Man, because if you can't get your one-trick pony running, you're going to automatically lose that game.
That's fair, and I think that applies actually most Terrifugion agenda decks. You can't count on it because unless you're going to hamstring yourself by playing crappy plots like Summoning Season, you can't guarantee you'll have your character agenda.
One thing that I particularly did is Kindly Man is even more vulnerable than some of the other ones because he's an ally. And so anytime I had the opportunity, I would generally put a duplicate on my Kindly Man, not with the intention of using it as a kill save, but just to protect him from any of the ally hate. Mm-hmm. And then given the opportunity, I would kill him without using the duplicate, generally to the surprise of my opponents, and bring him straight onto the agenda.
Yeah.
That sounds perfectly reasonable. Well, what else are we seeing out of Stark these days as far as decks go? I know Brett has seen some success in the past with Stark Knights. Are they still reasonably a thing, do we think?
I think Stark Knights are still solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I built up a new version of it since the deck went from having one restricted card to like 15 restricted cards overnight back in February. And it's missing a couple pieces, but I think that they've gotten some decent tools to keep it going, and the core of the deck is all still there. Like, none of the Knights got restricted. It was just some of the extra stuff.
A bunch of the stuff in that Knights deck got restricted and stuff. Have they really gotten much in the way of new tools this year that are pretty impressive? Or just Stark in general? I can think of one card on my mind, but I thought I'd see what you guys thought.
I mean, Stark's kind of gotten the short end of the stick in the last year or so worth of cards. They've only gotten a couple, like, ones that I'd call, like, good in general, and then a couple more that are just, like, specific niche deck cards.
Yeah, I don't think, other than the Kindly Man himself, that Stark has gotten anything that's particularly amazing in the last year or so.
What are you thinking of, Will?
Well, I'm really digging, and, you know, I'm sure the listeners will massacre me for this because I don't have a card in front of me. And in order to try and keep Skype in line, I'm not even tempting myself by opening a browser window. What was the new limited response event they got in pack one of the King's Road cycle?
Oh, the Reaching the Wall, something like that?
Yeah, that sounds right. I'm really digging that event, especially with the restrictions to their card pool. It seems like a real solid additional kill event for them, you know, with the potential to hit multiple characters. Doesn't rely on just being printed strength higher, so you can hit some uber character stuff. And, I mean, it's not like there are really any limited responses that I can think of that are competing for that spot in Stark.
Nah, not really.
I'm not all that excited about it. I think Stark has enough kill offense. I think what they really need is more either ways of drawing or perhaps another renowned character, something to really end the game with.
Yeah, Stark really could use like a really good like all-around character that's like, like Damon Dance for me is really good, but he's conditional.
I agree.
All their other renowned characters are all four costs. They need a really good, like, cheapish renowned character that doesn't have like, you know, any huge glaring downsides if you just happen to run up against the wrong type of deck.
Right.
I can see that.
And one of the issues I ran into in making a winter deck is pretty much all the Stark main characters you might want to use are going to be four cost and aren't going to make it into my deck. Mm-hmm. So it really ends up working with the Kindly Man because you're not going to have all that many uniques anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
No, back to the question, hey, man. I think Stark Knights is, I mean, it's probably a tier two deck almost definitely. I wouldn't give it much more than that because it did lose a lot of tools, but I think you can make a fairly passable one. I mean, for the most part, I think it probably ditches. I mean, it obviously ditches Bear Island and the Refugee, and probably No Quarter because you can swap in some Winterous Cummings. I think is a pretty good swap in for No Quarters. So the choice is really Mira or Narrow Escape to me. Just my personal opinion, one of those two restricted cards.
And I would probably lean towards Mira myself. But
I would personally lean towards Narrow Escape.
Well, it's good to know we don't always make the exact same call. On
not
cards.
I'm going to go ahead and side with the Mira Reed side of the argument.
Thank you,
that
sir.
That card won me games in the tournament that I would not otherwise have won.
Well, she's absolutely strong. And there's not a wrong choice there, because both cards do fill an important role in the deck.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, what other decks are we seeing or have we seen out of Stark?
I mean, Stark Siege is always kind of like the elephant in the Stark room.
And it definitely got a couple new tools over the course of the last year. Got the new Epic Battle and the Droman, which is pretty good.
Yeah. They also got the Bastards Boys, which is a great way of raising claim. And I've seen decks using the army reducing Robb Stark, mm-hmm. or the manning the city walls to put that guy directly into play.
Really? For siege decks? I have not seen
I
that
saw
yet.
A pretty cool siege deck running some armies and running the Bastards Boys. It worked pretty well. Sort of a mass kill and power grab deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually that's pretty slick.
Yeah. No, I think Stark Siege falls kind of similar to like the Vera Rush decks, and you know when it goes off, it explodes and wins the game. And if it doesn't get you know just the right cards at just the right time, it just kind of like sputters and doesn't accomplish much.
Yeah, and you know there's been times I think where the meta has been more favorable to it because the opposing decks have been more forgiving. Are we at that kind of point right now, though?
Well, I think the biggest addition that deck actually got was Negotiations at the Great Sept.
Mm-hmm.
I would even consider using that as my restricted card because you could use your epic events before or after you use that card,
yep.
which can be huge if you're doing an epic.
Yeah, I mean, I agree totally. And it's also the ability to refill your hand is... Mm-hmm. So nice for a deck like that. That's kind of like a single-minded machine. When that particular game plan gets stymied, it can frequently fall apart. And refilling that steam is real handy.
Yeah.
When you can go get the more epic battles, which I'd been busy thinking more about characters, but that's a great point about the epic battles there, Luke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the Negotiations definitely seems like the restricted card, seeing as none of their you know, big non-kneeling characters or none of the epic battles are restricted. I think that's a pretty definite fit right there.
And I think any Stark Winter deck in general is strong right now, especially with some new winter toys that are coming out that you guys are going to be previewing.
Yeah. Are you liking Song of Ice for Stark?
You know, I really like the whole cycle of coming back and revisiting old themes. Alright, I think the best card in the pack for Stark is actually Green Dreams. Obviously, you'd have to be running the Season's Agenda, but it lets you search for Mira Reed or for Shadows Arya. And if you're running a Winter Stark deck, those two cards really make up the heart of your deck. So being able to search for them is huge.
Yeah, Mira Reed more than I mean that the Winter Shadows Arya is really good, but Mira Reed's in a different class.
Oh, totally.
I mean, agree. Mira is what you really want to search for.
Yeah.
But then if you still have another copy of the event, you might as well search for Arya too.
Oh yeah, absolutely,
totally. Well, and speaking of having more copies of stuff, there's two Stark cards that I also really like with Green Dreams. But in particular, I think that might actually give a good home to Galbert Glover and let you search your discard pile for some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that.
Galbraith's a card I've always loved. You could also bring back Rickon and do a double search.
Oh yeah, that sounds beautiful.
Yeah, I'm actually a pretty big fan of Rickon. I'm shocked he doesn't see more play. I mean, he is little strength, only one icon, but as long as you have a couple search effects you can trigger, I mean, you know, hopefully at least one a turn, he is solid.
Really, if he just copies once, I think he's pretty well paid for himself.
Yeah, probably.
Everything's gravy past that. And it gives you the opportunity to go get Crown of Winter, which I think is awfully well positioned right now. There's not much attachment control floating around that can handle it, and it provides some superb protection to a star guy on your side.
I think any unique attachment right now is going to be really hard to get rid of because the Dragon Thief is probably Targ's main weapon to get rid of attachments.
Yep.
And that doesn't target a unique.
Yeah. Which I've learned the hard way multiple times. Sometimes multiple times in the same game.
In fact, I think that was against me using the Crown of Winter.
I don't know. The one I'm thinking of, I was playing one of the locals, Joe. He had Widow's Wail on Cersei, and multiple times in the same game, I tried Ambushing Dragon Thieves to kill Widow's Wail.
Okay, it may have been Daryl I was playing then that was trying to get rid of the crown.
Yeah. But no, I definitely agree. Unique. If you're going to play an attachment, you want it to be a unique attachment. All right, so are there any other Stark archetypes that we missed? We got Kindly Man, No Agenda, Knights, Siege, and Winter.
You could also play a House of Dreams. One of my favorite House of Dreams build is actually using... it's the Widow's Watch.
Widow's Watch.
Love Widow's Watch.
And that's a great way of giving yourself some extra sort of draw.
Mm-hmm.
And you
totally
build yourself up against Valor. You could run two copies of Rickon and really run with the search theme in the deck. It's a very fun deck. I'm not sure it's tier one, but it's certainly worth trying.
Well, the one that I had is definitely not tier one, but it could get some crazy card advantage going with Widow's Watch. And then, of course, it actually lets you search for duplicates of unique cards, not just characters. So it was a Direwolf deck. So you play the Direwolf attachments and get dupes of them and thin out the deck. And I was playing the Corset Sansa that lets you draw when you play attachments on her. And it could really power out a lot of cards, but it was nowhere near tier one.
I think another thing you can do, this was in my version of the deck, coming back, you put your Galbraith Glovers in there, and you can also keep searching for the Riders of the Red Fork when you don't have a duplicate that you need.
I like it.
It gets discarded from your hand, Galbraith just grabs it from the discard pile again.
Oh, yeah. If Daryl Wood was on the show, he would absolutely agree with that, because he runs, in any Stark deck, he runs at least a couple... if he runs a single search effect.
That may be his favorite card in the game.
Yeah.
It is a great card.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, even if all he has is at the gates to go get a Lewin, he'll run a Riders of the Red Fork or two, just in case he needs to go grab that instead. And I can't blame him for it.
Yeah, me either. Well, thinking of search effects and at the gates and stuff, you know, Stark Maesters was rearing its ugly head for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And there hasn't been anything new that I can think of that's really detracted from that deck. Is it still viable at the moment?
I think what's really detracted from the deck that's new is that Stark just keeps getting more cards added to the restricted list. And so just by running the Maester agenda, you're really nerfing a lot of your options.
I can see that. You're giving up, well... That big card we were talking about earlier, Mirror Reed.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Stark Maesters, I think it may have won a regional or two. I know the other local Brett player, I think he was playing that at the Moon Boy, I think, and he top-8ed with it, of using the Faller of the Many-Faced God to get extra standing actions or effects to stand up your Maesters or other characters with any kind of Kneel effect. And it's a fine deck. I think Maester's Time of the Sun is over. They've been restricted enough that now they're not really that viable anymore, in my opinion.
It may be a good thing. that their time in the sun is over.
Yeah, someone else needs a turn.
My personal favorite is Baratheon Maesters and really abusing the standing of the King Robert's Hammer and the Massey's Hook,
mm-hmm.
so that you can draw, you can stand, you can abuse your chains, and do a massive Baratheon rush.
Yeah. And they also have the new Fury now.
Mm-hmm. I like the new
warship.
The new Fury doesn't stand a character with
attachments. Oh, there's no attachments. You're right.
It's almost like they plan to cover that kind of thing.
Almost.
Okay. So did we miss out on any other Stark archetypes at the moment?
I can't think of any, really.
Yeah, I think those are the best ones.
Okay.
You could try running a Bolton deck, but I've personally tried a half a dozen different Bolton builds.
No doubt.
I could get it to, I'd say maybe tier 1.5, but never something I would consider truly competitive.
Well, that's unfortunate.
They are a lot of fun, though.
Yeah, that Dreadfort just always looks so tempting.
My personal recommendation, if you ever want to take a stab at a Bolton deck, is run your Dreadfort. But then also run Jane Westerling and Robb Stark, the one who can pump all your Boltons, mm-hmm. and then run three copies of Pyromancer's Cache, because I think your Bolton deck needs to have insane draw, and if for some reason you don't get your Dreadfort, those Pyromancer's Caches can really power your draw ahead.
I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, and then also, I mean, Pyromancer's Cache isn't really a bad. I mean, I know Stark also has Mirrors and a lot of other restricted cards they can consider, but most Stark decks, I feel like, are probably running the King Rob that boosts guys, and probably Jane to search him out, maybe like a Mance or something just for some extra utility. So I don't think Pyromancer's Cache is. I think it's rarely a bad choice for a Stark deck. It may not always be the right choice, but it's rarely a bad choice.
Well, and if you do happen to be going that House of Dreams route with it, with, you know, the Dreadfort, of course, that gives you a rather safer target to put the attachment on. So.
True. All right, and I have a question for you guys about House Stark. And it's been my. I've been trying to think of how to phrase this. So is Stark a bad house or the baddest house?
The baddest. That makes it sound like it's so bad it's good kind of thing, you know?
That's not the way I meant it, though.
I didn't think so.
I think one of the things I love the most about House Stark is I think it has the most versatility of tools and really one of the most diverse card pools of any of the houses. So I think it really has the potential to be a top house if you can come up with the right build for it.
Well, fair enough. Yeah. I haven't had success with this. Stark's never been historically a deck I've been, or a house I've been terribly fond of, but I just rarely find a Stark deck that I can make sing.
You've got so many great toolbox options, though. It just feels like they have an option for everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what led me to pick out my Octagon tournament deck, is if you combine Mirror Reed and Wintertime Marauders, there's really not a deck out there that the two of them can't deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Those two are two of the most busted cards in the game.
Agreed.
So put them together and you got a great deck.
Yeah, I mean, I've long been saying Mira is probably the best card in the game, and Wintertime Marauders is the best card that's not yet restricted. So we'll see how long that lasts.
I think it's going to last. I think it's what makes Greyjoy Winter worth playing.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, if Greyjoy Winter loses the Marauders, then Greyjoy just loses that deck as legitimate.
Well, it wouldn't necessarily lose the Marauders. It would just have to play them.
We'll give up Asha or Fury.
Yeah.
Greyjoy may not have any restricted cards, but they have a lot of the hardest choices for their couple of restricted card options.
my personal restricted card choice in most Greyjoy decks is actually Val. She just spews Greyjoy cards out, locations, characters. Yeah.
I can see that.
All that cheap stuff. Well, speaking of, you know, Stark's power level and how they keep getting stuff restricted, as we were saying earlier, I think, Luke, you'd mentioned you'd kind of put together a list of some of Stark's, like, top underplayed cards, right?
Yeah, I believe you called this the criminally underplayed list.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be necessarily the top five best cards, but just cards that I'd like to see more of in most decks. So I'm going to start us off with number five, and that's actually Jory Cassel
from
The Clash of Arms.
I really like that guy. I love Jory Cassel.
He's super versatile. What I love about him the most is he gives me the option of running duplicates of other characters in the deck and having those cards not be dead cards in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
He's also, of course, perfect in a Kindly Man deck because you could take something like a House Umber Berserkers that you don't necessarily want to play right now, stick it on him as a duplicate, and then have it in your discard pile later when you want it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's pretty cool.
And it's also hard to go wrong with a 3-strength Warcrest Milpow guy who's going to stay on the board pretty much the whole game.
Yeah. It's hard. You have to kill him twice in a round, basically, to actually get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
So I put him as my number five. Number four, I'm going to go with Frozen Solid. It's a card that I think a lot of people realize it's good, and it just doesn't make it into enough decks. It is so versatile and can really handle and take out the engine of a lot of decks. So if you've got a copy of Frozen Solid or two, that could be your game-winning card more often than not.
Yeah, weird. It's hard for me to think of that as, like, criminally underplayed because I'm not sure I can conceive of not playing it in one of my Stark decks. Maybe not a full three of, but certainly two.
Well, perhaps criminally underplayed for you and for the world at large is...
Oh, yes. I frequently had that brought to my attention.
Oh, yeah. Although, I can honestly say that I can't remember the last time I actually put Frozen Solid into a Stark deck. It's always a card that just never quite makes the cut. There's always something else I'd rather have over it.
Yeah. Caveat to that statement for me, I rarely play Stark, so...
Fair enough.
That probably has some influence on that.
So, moving on to number three, I went with a location here. It's another somewhat obvious candidate that just doesn't make it into enough decks, which is the Frozen Outpost. It's hard to say just how good this card is. You're probably going to be playing Catelyn from your hand. The Frozen Outpost lets you stand her back up and go on the attack. It lets you defend challenges. In my deck, it let me use that Wintertime Marauders so that my opponent never wanted to attack me unless it could stealth them.
Yeah, it is an incredibly frustrating card to be playing against, and a frequent reason why I will include a couple city plots and a city besieged in many decks, just to be able to get to that 2-cost point to knock out that card.
Absolutely. Number two, I went with Mira Reed because I think, despite everything that we've talked about, she is the number one card in the game, and she should be your restricted card in any competitive Stark deck. I think she's that good.
I can get behind you on that for sure.
I can definitely see where you're coming from. I may not play her in all my Stark decks, but there's probably a good argument for me to play her in all my Stark decks.
And my number one choice is actually a card that I love running out of house just as much as I do in-house, which is Jane Westerling. Jane actually makes it into most of my Baratheon decks.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Search for Stannis, search for Robert, And she actually makes it into some of my Greyjoy decks, too, when I'm really needing to get that Euron Crow's Eye out.
I've definitely run her and seen her run out of Baratheon, but hadn't really thought about Greyjoy before. That's pretty cool.
I think she's pretty much one of the best one-cost characters in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, she just gives you a high amount of card advantage or in card quality there for so cheap.
Absolutely.
I support that list. It's pretty accurate.
Well, thank you.
Well, speaking of thank you, thanks for appearing on here, Luke. Maybe as one last parting thought, overall here, if you just had to give Stark, House Stark a grade, you were testing them on their finals at the end of the year here, what would you give them right now?
I would say I'd give them an A-. I think the minus really goes to the fact that they don't quite have enough draw, but I think they've got so many tools and so many ways to win games that they have to get at least some form of A.
Fair enough.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. It's our pleasure. Thank you for joining.
Thanks so much for being on.
You are.
Yep. I am ready right now as well.
All right, so I believe last week, William, Darrell, and Ben covered the first half of the new chapter pack. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. We did indeed.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Oh, yes, we did indeed.
Well, I'm sorry, I missed that. That was a really awkward pause, Will. Will, are you still there? William?
Damn it. Couldn't do it any longer. And I figured you'd notice if I actually hit the mute button on my mic, because it would, you know, cut out the background.
Yeah. I figured.
Yeah. Anyway. I don't even remember where we were now.
I don't either.
Okay.
This is what you get with your shenanigans.
Let's start over.
So, I believe last week, William, Darrell, and a special guest host, Ben Terpstra, previewed the first half of the newest pack. Is that correct?
Yep, sure did.
All right. Well, without further ado, William and myself will finish off the chapter pack.
Yeah. It's too bad Daryl's not on the show. I think he would have just made a really dirty joke about that.
I hope so.
All right, you want to be first on our next card, or shall I?
I'll start it off.
Okay.
All right, so the beginning of the last half of the pack, card number 31, Oberyn's Shieldbearer. It's a 2-cost, non-unique Martell character. He has 2 strength and a military icon. He is a bannerman and an ally. He is House Martell only. With the any phase text, if it is summer, discard Oberyn's Shieldbearer, cannot be saved, to cancel the next 3 effects triggered by a single opponent of your choice this round. Now, this guy has a couple things going against him. One, he is an ally.
Mm-hmm.
He only has 1 icon.
Mm-hmm.
And his ability requires it to be summer.
Right. On the flip side, he has the potential to be totally amazing.
That is definitely true.
Having played him in a couple games and actually gotten to use him for, what was it, 2 or 3 turns against you?
Mm-hmm, something like that. At least 2 turns in a row.
Yeah, I can totally see the potential. It's just going to be a matter of getting the deck refined to a point where you can use him as many times as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, of course, I'm using Shores of the Summer Sea and Summer Market. Is that the right name? Now that I said it, it sounds
Open
like...
Open Market.
Open Market, there we go. As ways to get access to him over again. So I think some of the cards in the deck probably need tweaked a little bit. I may need to go with a 3rd copy of Green Dream.
Mm-hmm.
To really make certain I maximize my ability to get in. Okay. But
no, his ability could definitely be crippling. You know, whether they're probably the two best times to use it are either in the marshalling phase to, you know, kill reducers and such, or in the challenge phase to block out any kind of challenge phase shenanigans that your opponent may have.
Oh, yeah. It's great to shut down any unexpected stuff and challenges. And when I use it against you, I definitely shut down, geez, what? You had like three or four reducer locations mm-hmm. that it shut down, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately for me, you also got a Summer C that you could use after you knelt all the other ones out. Yeah. So you were able to actually get something on the board that
turn. Play some characters,
Yeah. But still, it was enough for me to really see a lot of potential here. And of course, there's the obvious one that's been talked about a good bit with other folks. But despite it kind of telegraphing things a bit, you can always discard him and then reveal Valor Magullis as your plot.
Yeah, if your opponent has a lot of saves on the board.
Yeah, and you know what the cool thing about it is, even though that like telegraphs what you're going to do, he also would cancel Outwit.
Yes, he would.
So your opponent still can't stop it.
Yeah.
Unless they have to have the cancel for the shield bear, and that's their only chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It telegraphed, but it's a telegraph that your opponent really can't do anything about.
Yeah. So, I mean, I dig him quite a bit. I think he shows a lot of promise. He does have to be in a fairly specific deck, though. Mm-hmm. So I probably wouldn't give him, you know, A+ sort of rating. But I'm feeling a pretty solid B, maybe a B+ once I have the chance to refine the deck some more.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm feeling a solid C, if because unless you are playing a Martell Summer deck, he is garbage. Now in the Martell Summer deck, he's a little better, but overall, if I was just grading him as a card, a C.
Okay, fair enough.
Next up.
Yeah, also a Martell card. This time we have a Shadows Event. The Long Plan, it has an S1 cost. It's House Martell only, of course. And response, after you have lost your third challenge in the same phase, bring the Long Plan out of shadows by paying the rest of its gold cost. Then, claim 3 power for your house. Limit 1 per phase. Really? I think it's decent. It's probably not going to be my go-to thing in Martell because I generally want to play some kind of control Martell, but it definitely looks like it has a home in Melee. That's going to be a sweet Melee card.
Yeah, in Melee it's fine, but I'm not, as you may remember, Will, I'm not the huge fan of Melee.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, I don't know.
We've and had games of Melee.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, I'll play some casual Melee occasionally, but as far as competitive goes, I'm not so interested. But the Long Plan definitely has a place in a Martell Melee deck. You're right there.
Yeah, I mean, and it's great. You don't have to lose only on attack or defense. It can be either or. So, I mean, certainly in a Melee game, there's a great opportunity for you to do that.
Although still not guaranteed.
Right. And since it is a Shadows card sitting on the table, once you have one in Shadows, opponents have to start wondering what it is. And certainly in Melee, they're really going to be wondering if that's the Long Plan. Of course, on the other hand, if that deflects some incoming challenges other directions or gets opponents to let your little piddly, like, one-strength military challenge go through undefended, you may still be getting quite a bit of benefit out of it.
Yeah, that's fine, I guess. But I'm not going to give it more than, like, a D, honestly.
A D? Man.
It's not a card that I think is going to see any, like, it might see some play in Melee, but even then not every Melee deck, just, you know, some Melee decks.
I think it's very solid for the deck it's intended, which to me really appears to be Martell Melee, and so I'm feeling a solid C on it.
Agree to disagree.
I'm turning into the Daryl of this episode, rating everything a letter grade higher.
You are. All right. Moving out of Martell, going to the opposite end of the continent, up to the north, with House Stark. First up is another Bran Stark. I believe the third one the LCG has seen, if I count correctly.
I believe so.
Yeah. He is 2 cost.
No,
2
fourth.
Strength.
Sorry.
He's what?
Fourth. We've got plot changing, intrigue power gaining, Wargeen, like Direwolf standing.
You're right.
And now Wargeen taking over other characters.
Yeah. Okay. You're totally right. I forgot about the third one.
Yep.
But yes, Bran Stark. He is 2 cost, 2 strength of a power icon. He's a skin changer, which might be the first time the skin changer tree has been in the game that I've seen.
No, it's been in before.
Has it been?
Yeah. I'd need to do a real quick search to see who it was on, but I do recall seeing it.
Well, I'm fairly confident he's the first Bran Stark that's a skin changer.
I'm fairly confident there, but let's take a look. Skin changer. Yep. I thought Aurel had it. Yep. Aurel, oh, okay. Eagle, and Varamyr. I'd forgotten about Varamyr.
Fair enough. Well, he is also a lord. And if it is winter, Bran Stark gains challenges. During a challenge, Neil Bran Stark could choose a Neil, a standing, non-participating, non-army character with higher strength than printed cost. That character is now participating in the current challenge on your side.
Can I just say, I almost don't understand what characters can be chosen. There are so many restrictions on this ability.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And that really does not enthuse me about it.
It does not, no. So just ensure his ability. It has to be winter. Bran Stark has to be standing.
Oh, Brett. Oh. Hang loose. Mm-hmm. It was starting to get pretty garbled there.
Okay. Am I better now?
I think so. Start that thought over.
Yeah. So just to trigger Bran Stark, it has to be winter. Bran Stark has to be standing. There has to be a standing, non-participating, non-army character with higher strength than printed cost. That's a lot to get through just to be able to use an ability.
Yeah. It's too many restrictions. Holy cow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Winter, Bran, of course, has to be standing, is 2... Then the character has to be standing is 3, has to be not participating is 4, can't be an army is 5, and higher strength than printed cost 6.
So 6 restrictions.
6 restrictions. Holy crap.
Yeah. I mean, it's a strong effect. I won't say it's not. It's just a strong effect that you'll be able to trigger once a game, maybe, if you're lucky.
Yeah, taking control is always a strong effect. As long as you have to use it on your opponent's stuff, it's going to be difficult, I think, to make certain that happens. Now, of course, you can use Bran to, you know, warg into Hodor or somebody mm-hmm. else on your side.
It's a very deadly card in that way.
Yeah, to jump them into a challenge. But I'm not sure that's a terribly efficient use of the ability.
It's not. With all those restrictions, with, you know, not being able to count on every tree. I mean, your opponent might not play a single character with higher strength than pretty costs. So at that point, Bran Stark's worthless. I think just for that, I have to give him a D.
Yeah, and particularly with there being several hate cards in this set for those higher strength than printed cost characters, you may not, you know, you may really see people dial back on those. Mm-hmm. So I actually think I'm going to agree. This Bran is a D. Plus, is that art not weird? Like, the art's really been top-notch lately, and this one seems out of place.
Really? I like it just fine.
It's creepy, I'll say that.
I'll agree with that.
Alright. On to the next one?
On to the next one.
Okay, this one's a Stark location. It's unique. It is Winterfell. It's a 3-cost stronghold. House Stark only, and no attachments. Challenges. If it is winter, Neil Winterfell to increase the claim of the current challenge by 1.
That's a pretty nice effect.
I dig it. You've been talking lately about how much you are liking Winter is Coming.
Yep.
And this is a repeatable Winter is Coming.
Winter is Coming on a stick.
Mm-hmm. As long as it is winter.
Yes,
so winter has came, I guess.
Yeah, winter. Yeah, it did.
I mean, look at that. There's white stuff all over.
It's all over. Yes, it has to already be winter. But once it is winter, you can make winter come more often.
On command.
On command, yes.
One might say.
And it does have a little bit of built-in protection in the no attachments keyword.
You know, since we keep making these jokes about winter coming, I'm reading the flavor text on this card from Caitlin, and it just sounds terrible. Winterfell may have need of all its swords soon, and they had best not be made of wood. What, pray tell, should they be made of, Lady Stark?
Oh, Nate. I'm sure that was Nate Flynn all along.
Almost certainly. But sorry, back to the ability itself. Yep. I think that's a really strong ability up mm-hmm. in your claim on any challenge that it's going to be most impactful every turn. I mean, Stark already has the ability to really lay the beat down with a bunch of two claim plots. That suddenly turns into claim three on whichever one is most important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, it is a three cost location that can only be triggered in winter.
Right.
And as a location, it doesn't have near as many reducer effects as a character would have.
It does not. It is, however, much more safe than your average character, and this is even more safe than your average location because it is both unique and can't have attachments.
True.
So the most common option you're probably going to see hitting it is going to be what? Newly Made Lord?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Newly Made Lord will destroy this card.
Yeah, which is definitely unfortunate. There's not much really that you can do about that there. But I think that's still a risk that I'm frequently willing to take.
Yeah. I can see that. It's definitely worth, you know, messing around with at the very least. Three costs might be too prohibitive for a location in a winter deck, but I'm not willing to write it off entirely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even despite it potentially getting hit by Newly Made Lords and stuff, like, as long as you're using that claim increase on a military or an intrigue challenge, and obviously as long as you win it, it's a plus one card advantage for you every time.
Yeah, that's true.
Plus X number of resource advantage for you as well, if it's on the military challenge.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think that'll really add up over the course of a game. I'll need to kind of test it out. But I'm feeling like a C+ at the moment.
I'm actually thinking the exact same thing. It could go up, it could go down based on testing, but just on my first blush analysis, not having a chance to really, you know, get into the nitty gritty of the card, I'm pretty confident with a C+.
Okay.
It is a pretty impressive effect at the very least.
Indeed.
All right. Next up, it's a card we've already mentioned once this episode, a neutral event, Green Dreams. I know we've also talked about it on the show before, but I'll read it again for anyone that's just tuning in and missed the previous spoiler, or basically wasn't really a spoiler, but the kind
previous
of was. Never
discussion.
Mind. Yes, discussion. It has a dominance effect. If you're running a Seasons agenda, so one of the new Song of Ice or Song of Fire agendas, search your deck for a non-Raven card with either the word Summer or Winter in its text box, reveal it, and add it to your hand. Then shuffle your deck.
I freaking love this card.
It's really good. It just cycles through, thins out your deck, gets you whatever, you know, season-related card, or not necessarily season-related card, but card with summer or winter in its text box that you need.
Yeah, I mean, that still is going to be a lot of really great cards mm-hmm. that you'll be able to go get with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't know. I just, the dominance phase sucks. But it's really versatile. It gives some nice search options to houses that don't normally have particularly nice search options.
Yeah.
And there are definitely some that are worth going and getting out of houses like, say, Martell. Or Greyjoy. To go get those Wintertime Marauders.
Or Stark can go grab that Mira.
Yep, exactly. Or Lannister can go get Tommen.
Yeah.
Okay, that's probably not worth it.
No.
I looked at putting together a Lannister summer deck. It's just not there.
That's unfortunate.
Yep. But I really love Green Dream. It's still got to be a fairly specific deck.
Yes.
So I'm probably not going to give it all the way up at the top, but I'm feeling a really solid B.
Yeah. I actually agree with that completely. It does, I mean, it's... As far as you know, card requirements go, the only one that I can think is more specific is naval reinforcements, because it requires you playing one specific agenda. This one gives you an option of two specific agendas. So,
right. There's still a wide range of builds within those agendas,
absolutely.
At least.
Absolutely. But yeah, no, I agree. A solid B. If it wasn't a dominance effect, that'd be a different story entirely. But as a dominance, I still think it's very playable.
If it was pre-challenge, phase or mm-hmm. any phase, it would be an A all the way, I think.
Absolutely. All right, Will, what's up next?
We move on to the House of the Dragon now with Khal Drogo. He's a unique 4-cost Targaryen character with 3 strength, a military and a power icon, and a warcrest. He's a lord and Dothraki. He's House Targaryen only and has renown. And if it is summer, each of your characters gets +2 strength while you control more attachments than each opponent.
So kind of the summertime flip side of the new Balon Greyjoy that we got in this pack also.
Yeah, but not as good.
Not as good.
I think there are other better Drogo options, and the main thing, I think, Balon there needed you to have more locations, which are fairly sturdy most of the time, mm-hmm. and Greyjoy is very good at removing the opposing locations in order to keep their count up. And in fact, they love having their own. Targaryen, on the other hand, here with Khal Drogo, yes, they're really good at removing the opponent's attachments, but they're not as good at protecting their own. I mean, they have some good options, don't get me wrong, but attachments are just so fragile.
They are.
And most of the ones that are played, are especially out of Targaryen, are ones that go on opponents' characters to do negative things to them, mm-hmm. which means they're even less likely to stick around.
Yeah, that's true. Although, on the other hand, with Khal Drogo, in the current metagame, if you have a single attachment in play, you probably control more attachments than your opponent.
Possibly.
I can't think of many games I'll put it this way, I don't play many decks that play a copy of an attachment card.
Well, maybe you're behind the times. Maybe everybody's about to start playing attachments all over the place.
Maybe. But no, I think you're right. This Khal Drogo, I think there probably are better options in general.
Yeah, so what kind of rating would you give him?
I'm going to give him a C-, just because, I mean, it is a big strength buff and one that I think Tar could pretty easily pull off, but just because there are so many other, I mean, not necessarily so many other, but a lot of other better Drogo options, I can't give him much more than that.
Yeah, man, I'm just not really feeling confident about it. I think there's better summer effects. I think it's kind of a tenuous thing to keep turned on. There's better Drogos. I'm feeling like a C-, maybe as low as a D+. I just really don't think he'll see play.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. All right, I'm up again.
Yep.
All right, next up, still in Targaryen, we have Slaver's Bay. It's a 2-cost unique location that has the East trait and a response. If it is summer, after you win a power challenge, kneel Slaver's Bay to put a non-unique character from any opponent's discard pile into play under your control.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah, that's pretty fierce. Again, it has not quite as many play restrictions as Bran did up above, but there are still a lot of restrictions. So it does have to be summer. It is only after you win a power challenge, and you do have to kneel it, and it's only non-unique characters
right.
that are already in a discard pile.
But you do get that one permanently.
Yeah, it is. You gain it. Not until the end of the phase. You gain it. It is your character now.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. Things are going to happen. You're probably going to have stuff open to you there. It's not quite Kindly Man level of awesome because you can't get it out of your own piles, though it is definitely sturdier than the Kindly Man.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of tough for me to give this one a rating without really having the chance to try and play it out. And so much of its ability, like you were saying, is dependent on your opponent. Like, you only ever have their characters available to you. So it completely depends on what they're doing.
Yeah. And its characters have already been discarded specifically. If it was dead or discard pile, I'd probably give it a little bit higher rating, but just discard is pretty much just characters from Intrigue Claim, or I guess if you're running Burn, you have your Threat from the North turn.
Yeah. Or even if it was just dead. It would be pretty awesome because of, you know, Targaryen's many ways to put stuff in the dead pile, not the least of which is Aegon's Hill.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really have anything to go the other direction in-house there. So it's a tough one to rate. I'm going to give it a tentative C for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a tentative C minus. The only thing that keeps it out of the D range is the fact that the gain control permanently is a really strong effect.
Yeah.
For something for a card that, I mean, winning a power challenge, Sarah can probably do that. I don't know. But C minus is the best I can do.
And an additional thought that struck me, it's a sort of really powerful ability that you look at there and, you know, see that it's unique, and you immediately won't want to think about that with the House of Dreams. But unfortunately, it also has that summer requirement, mm-hmm. which definitely right now is going to be iffy because you're not going to be able to run that season's agenda.
Yeah.
Maybe later on down the line, if they kind of fade in popularity, you can run the risk of having a random bad matchup and, you know, choose something else as your House of Dreams in that
like
particular match. Yeah, exactly. It'd be a reasonable substitute, but I still think so much of your draw deck is going to be needing to, you know, be geared around this kind of thing that it would be tough.
Alright. Next up on the list?
Yeah, our last Targaryen card in the pack. Dothraki Vanguard. It is a 3-cost, 2-strength character with military and power icons. It's a Bannerman and Dothraki, and has the text, Response. After you play Dothraki Vanguard from your hand, reveal the top 5 cards of your deck. You may put one revealed Dothraki character into play. Shuffle the other cards back into your deck.
Woo-wee.
Yeah. Straight into play, man.
Yeah.
No,
any Dothraki.
Yeah, no paying that cost or anything. Can you say, let's see, Drogo's Horde? For free, even easier than their normal ability to come into play for free.
Khal Drogo.
Yep.
Any of the Blood Riders.
Can you say Thundering Cavalry for free?
Literally any character because it's for free.
Can you, well, any Dothraki.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Can you say Queen Daenerys Horde for free?
They are not a Dothraki.
Yeah, trick question, actually. I was looking at it right now. How much of a bummer is it that it is literally named Queen Daenerys Horde? And very obviously features Dothraki in the art, but is not Dothraki.
Yeah, I think about every time I look at that card.
Yeah, I know, right?
But no, this card is huge for Dothraki decks.
Yeah.
Like, if we thought Braided Screamers were going to put them on the map, this is Braided Screamers on steroids.
I mean, and this has totally got to be the reason that we got the nerf.
Oh, yeah.
Screamers. Because the two of these together is already exceptionally strong. If you had the two of these together and some other restricted card, then It's just very powerful. I mean, I've seen Joe was playing his Dothraki deck against me last week, I think it was, and I was playing that Greyjoy Martell choke against him. I had him literally counting 0 gold on a turn, and we'd gone into that turn, I think, with 2 characters apiece, and at the end of the turn, end of that marshalling, going into challenges, he had 8. I tell you. Yeah. Because these things, these and the screamers and stuff, if you can afford to get one on the table, they just keep, you know, dropping other stuff out there. It's crazy.
Especially if you have ways to bounce them back to hand and put them into play, like, I don't know, Summer Encampment.
Oh, man. I love Summer Encampment combos.
Some plot choices like Call to Court or there's a River Plot that bounces. And any other river plot, you can trigger the bounce river plot again.
Yep. I've really been digging that river plot lately.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this card just screams abuse me.
Yeah. Again, it just continues Targaryen's theme of getting the very best comes into play effects. Mm-hmm. By far.
Although it does make me scared of any potential Dothraki cards printed in the future have to be measured up against this card.
Yeah. Though it's worth noting, since I brought up the comes into play stuff, it is only after you play it from your hand.
Yes.
So you can't cheat it into play with stuff like Ambush from the Plains.
Correct.
Or, well, rather you can, you just won't get to trigger the ability.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
But no, Dothraki Vanguard. I mean, I can't give it higher than a B because it is, I mean, outside of a Dothraki deck, it's garbage.
Yeah.
But boy, how do you know Dothraki deck is going to rip some shit up?
It's so good. It gives that deck so much card advantage that they needed. I mean, card and resource advantage there together. I think this is definitely going to keep them on the map. I'm feeling like a strong B plus, I think, because it's so good in that particular build.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. All right. Last two cards of the pack. There are, again, two more that we have seen on the podcast before. The two new agendas. The first one up is A Song of Fire. It has the Seasons trait, so it does work with Green Dreams. And with the text, if no opponent is running a Seasons agenda, it cannot be Winter. If it is Summer, increase each player's draw cap by one.
Mm-hmm. You know what it doesn't have? I noticed this while I was looking at it the other day when we were playing.
What doesn't it have?
Illustrator info.
It doesn't, actually.
No one illustrated it.
Hmm. Awkward.
Yeah. I don't know where that art came from.
No.
So what do you think about the agenda?
I actually really like Song of Fire. It's grown on me in the last 2 weeks or so since I got my hands on the pack.
I dig the ability. I've definitely been in places already in the handful of games I've had the chance to use it with where it has definitely benefited my opponent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, have you?
Yeah. I mean, I could have sworn it did against you one game when we were playing the other day.
I think so.
And Buzz and I were playing on Octagon the other day, and we were both using Song of Fire.
Oh.
And he capped out at 5 cards one turn since we both were running it. So that was awkward.
Yeah, I could see that.
But I kind of dig it. I like a lot of the little, like, cantrippy style effects. Parting Blow and Downing Septa.
Yeah.
And you can get into awkward positions in those where you have already drawn up to your, you know, draw cap earlier in the phase, or sorry, the round, you know, trying to get stuff to Marshall or whatever it might be. And then you're kind of in a weaker spot later where you're getting less out of those cards than you would have wanted.
Yeah.
And that one extra card out of Song of Fire, I think, can actually really make a difference.
Yeah, I can see that. And also, I always feel like an idiot if I have a Stanwell in play and I play a Raven and draw into another Raven. Like, I don't want to play it because I'm only going to get the one card, but sometimes I need another body.
Yeah, and then you're looking at it and you're like, it might get discarded. Yeah.
Yeah, but it does give you the ability to trigger two Stanwells, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah, totally relevant, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, Song of Fire, what are you thinking grade-wise?
You know, I've also kind of got to balance it with some of the summer effects. The old summer effects, definitely subpar compared to winter. But ones, some of them are really starting to catch up. So it takes a good bit of deck space to really take advantage of this, but I'm feeling, I think, a pretty reasonable B on Song of Fire.
Yeah, I feel pretty similarly about it. You're right. If some of the older summer effects were better, it'd probably be a better card overall, because really all it has going for it is some of the new summer effects and then, you know, a card here or a card there from cards that are already in the environment.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I guess it's me with the last card.
Last one.
Okay. That's going to be A Song of Ice, also an agenda, and it is Seasons. And if no opponent is running a Seasons agenda, it cannot be Summer. If it is Winter, each player must choose and discard down to 4 cards in hand at the end of the dominance phase. Also, no Illustrator.
Yeah. I don't know. This card, it has a much flashier effect than the other one does, and I think early on, I think that tempered my opinion on it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I get to thinking, the more I feel like it'll probably hurt for the first turn that gets triggered. But then after that, I don't think that people will be discarding more than a card or two, really. So then once you discard down to 4 cards, I just don't think you're going to get a giant hand again.
Yeah, yeah. But it, I think it does really force a lot of those decks that rely on an awful lot of card advantage and large hands to play kind of outside their comfort zone.
Yeah, I can see that.
They lose that big hand to begin with, and then after that, they really have to play more stuff out to the board and use up things less judiciously than they're used to, play a little more recklessly, or lose it anyway, which, you know, is kind of a subtle thing, but I think throwing them off their game might be good for you.
Yeah, that's a good point. No more, you know, sitting on the Hatchling's Feast you drew into just in case you want to use it on a later turn or if there's, you know, some better targets available. If you have it, you really have to use it or you may lose it.
Right, right. Which, and that really ups the impact of, say, the Intrigue Challenge. Once you've got people down to just like those four cards in hand, you know, you marshal, say, two. I think that's a pretty reasonable baseline per turn. And then you've only got two cards in hand. If one of those is an event that you're, you know, hoping to sit on to play at an opportune time, say a Hatchling's Feast, and you don't have Threat from the North revealed that turn, you're in a pretty awkward position because you've probably got a 50% chance of losing it if you don't play it.
Well, I think you're not valuing it quite correctly because by the time it goes around that's marshaling, you'll have six cards because you'll have your two draw at least.
Right, right. But I'm saying it. Okay. Yes, you'll have that. So baseline, if you've only played two cards, then you will still have four in hand going into challenges. Yes. So it's a 25% chance of losing that. But depending on the rest of the board state, if your opponent's really dropping stuff on the board to keep their hand size down, you may need to be keeping up with them.
Yeah.
I don't know. My numbers are pretty fuzzy, but I think the impact of trying to hold something in your hand is accurate.
Oh yeah, you're right with the thought behind it at least.
And it opens up some cool possibilities for stuff for you to do. I mean, Baratheon already has a few good, interesting winter effects, and they've got a lot of real good recursion effects. So if I get to force my opponent to play with around this restriction, while also being able to turn on some of my own effects and, you know, totally not hardly be impacted, you know, by it because of my own stuff, be it See Who Is Stronger or Dale or, you know, Mel Schemes
or, you know, the Laughing Storm.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Then I think I'm pretty okay with that.
Yeah.
So I think they've got a lot of potential there that I'd like to check out.
Yeah, I wish Bear had better winter cards in general.
I mean, they've got a couple good ones. I do really dig the new Garland. He's more of an autumn or winter, you might say. Mm-hmm. And the Shadow Stalker, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Has a lot of potential. I still haven't really quite seen him, you know, be put together in a deck. But maybe something could happen.
Maybe. Maybe. All right. So, Will, what kind of grade are you thinking for a Song of Ice?
Song of Ice? I think I see more interesting potential with it. But overall, less need to kind of dedicate your draw deck slots than Song of Ice, Song of Fire, to really take advantage of it. The opponent can play around. You know, all things considered, it's going to sound weird, but I think the pros and cons kind of balance it out to being probably about a B as well.
Yeah, that's what I was feeling also. And I mean,
plus the winter effects are the other ones are very strong.
Yes,
I forgot to mention that since I considered it on Song of Fire.
Yeah, absolutely. And that definitely goes into my opinion on it also. Honestly, I think I like the effect of Song of Fire more than Song of Ice because it's something that you can take advantage of every single turn.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Song of Ice, I just don't see it. I mean, I don't think people are going to be discarding very many cards to it after the very first time. After that, I just don't think the effect is going to do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But there are better winter effects in general than there are summer effects.
Agreed.
Yeah, so I think it probably averages that to a B, although a different type of B than Song of Fire.
A different type of B. One is a green B, one is a blue B.
Yes, exactly. All right, so that's the our review of the new chapter pack. We do apologize for having to break it up over two episodes, but we didn't really plan for that in our running house breakdown episode ideas.
Yeah, exactly. But still,
it still got done in a reasonable amount of time, I feel.
Yeah, and it was a good pack. I think this one had better cards and more interesting impact on the game than the first one. So,
100%, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, but if you agree, disagree, think we're wrong, think we're brilliant, you can always let us know over the phone. You can do that not over the phone. I'm not at work anymore. online, I almost said chase.com, but no, online with Facebook, Google+, the Twitters, Card Game DB, whether it be the actual main page post or potentially a forum post, which sometimes gets started, I don't know.
Indeed.
You can also email us. We haven't gotten a lot of emails recently. That makes Daryl cry.
Yeah, we haven't. We've gotten a lot of comments on front page posts on Card Game DB lately, though.
Yeah, between that and Facebook, we're doing better than ever, honestly, but not so many emails.
Yeah. Props and flops. Ooh, we were so close to having that synchronized.
Really close.
So,
William, what do you have this week?
I've got one awesome one. You probably saw me post about it on Facebook, but many of our listeners probably did not, since I unfortunately have long passed the point where I had dreams of being Facebook friends with all of the listeners. And this is to a birthday present that I got yesterday. I got it a little early because Jonathan, a long time, like grade school friend of mine, just couldn't resist any longer because he's had it for about a month already. It is a whiskey sampler that he got me from Drinks by the Dram. He knew that I really like various whiskeys, so he got me three drams here, which is evidently three cubic... well, it's got to be centiliters. Looking at it, it's a quite small amount. It is, you know, one good drink each, basically. But he got me Yamazaki, a 10-year-old Japanese, the Elijah Craig small batch bourbon. It's a 12-year. And he knew I had been lamenting for some time now that I had pretty well missed my opportunity to get a bottle of an alcohol older than myself to drink it, because they start getting really expensive when you get up to, say, the 30-year, which is that big birthday that I'm getting close to hitting now. And so he got me a dram of a Glenfiddich 30-year-old.
Ooh.
So that I can have that at some point here in the next couple weeks before my birthday. So
yeah.
I'm awfully pumped about that.
It's a pretty good gift.
Yeah, I thought so. I told him I don't think anyone's going to top it this year. I don't know what other people may do, but that's setting a pretty high bar.
Yeah. Well, on the opposite of the spectrum, I have a double slop.
Ooh.
And it is both to myself and GameStop.
GameStop? Really?
So let me explain a little tale here. For the last couple weeks, I've been debating the pros and cons of a pretty major life decision I have every year or two. That's whether or not to get a new Pokemon game. It's a pretty important, you know, decision that everyone has to deal with, you know, in time. And this year, I pretty well decided that I wasn't going to get it. Until I woke up on Sunday morning, and I was thinking, no, I think I'm going to go get the new Pokemon game.
Just like or, that.
That's it. I was thinking, I kind of want the new Pokemon game. And I didn't honestly know when the release date was, because I don't work at GameStop anymore, so I don't really keep up with that. And I knew, and Alicia had a friend in town this weekend. So I knew they were going to be out doing things all day, and I'd be sitting around the house doing nothing. So like, you know, it'd be really convenient if it came out today, because then I could get it and play it and just kind of chill out at home and, you know, relax.
Right.
So I grabbed my phone and I thought, you know, and I have the GameStop app on my phone from when I used to work there. And I was thinking, you know, the GameStop app usually advertises the new games. Let's go look at it. So I flipped it open, went to the app real quick, and looked at it. And right on my page, it says Pokemon X, Pokemon Y, buy now.
X so I was like, and Y. So they're like male and female this time?
Yeah, I don't know the reasoning behind it. Who knows? I don't know.
Okay.
But the important part of it was it actually says buy now. And I have a picture of it for anyone that wants to call me on this. So I was excited. I jumped out of bed, took a shower real quick, went downstairs, went out the door, ran to go get a copy of it. And I have a random Target gift card I got a couple months ago for I don't even remember what. So I was going to go to Target and use up that gift card, a couple more bucks to grab it. And I walk in, and they don't have it anywhere. And I was about to make a scene, because, you know, I was pretty excited about Pokemon. And I'm like, you know, I'm just going to double check it and make sure it did come out today. So I, again, whip it up. Look at it. It still says Pokemon X, Pokemon Y, buy now. I clicked on the actual ad itself. It brought me over to another screen where it says the release date was October 12th, or is October 12th.
Oh, those bastards.
Yeah, I know. I was furious.
So it should have actually been reserve now.
Yes, is what it should have been. Yeah, so I felt like an idiot for not doing the proper research, and it made me furious with GameStop.
As if your years of former employment there hadn't already done so.
As if. But yeah, so that's my big slop of the week.
Wow, way to be.
Yeah.
That sucks. You know, the funny thing is, I have remarkably little else at the moment. I'm still working on that same novel, so nothing new to report on the book front, aside from perhaps... Oh, I did break down and buy a couple new ones, one of which is Mistborn, so that's the next one I'll be reading. I'll finally get that crossed off the list.
Yeah, I mean, Mistborn's really good. The next two after that are not as good, but then Alloy of Law is incredible. I loved Alloy of Law, so it's worth reading those middle two books just to get to Alloy of Law.
Cool.
And you know, Will, humorously, I actually can't think of a prop for this last week.
Really,
it's been a pretty
negative weekend week then for you.
Right? Yeah.
Okay. Well, at least you know we balance out between the two of us.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks. We'll enjoy another fine episode of Two Champs, One Chump. Join us next week as we continue on our little merry-go-round of house breakdowns leading up to Worlds. I think Greyjoy's up next week, if I recall correctly.
Greyjoy? Ooh, I was almost thinking it was Lannister. That is probably worth double-checking.
Well, it'll either be Greyjoy or Lannister, fine listeners, so stay tuned then. And we hopefully have a new FAQ to chat about a little bit, because I'm hoping it's going to drop this week. I don't know if it's going to, but I really want it to. If it does, you'll definitely hear about it next week on the episode.
Indeed.
Danger Zone!
Turn around, there's nothing to see here.